Welcome to episode 134 of the Sports Geek Podcast. On this week's episode, I chat Formula E and esports with Tom Halls.
Welcome to the Sports Geek Podcast, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals.
And now, here's your host, who suggests you should really rethink that bad password, Sean Callanan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, you are listening to the Sports Geek Podcast, either doing that on iTunes or Pocket Casts. I have given SoundCloud the flick. If you're listening to this because on the web, you might be doing so on Sports Geek HQ. I, like a lot of podcasters, have abandoned SoundCloud, and I think investors might be doing the same. So iTunes or, as I've said many a time, Pocket Casts app. But tell me where you like to listen to it, what apps you use. My name is Sean Callanan from Sports Geek, and you can find me at sean@sportsgeekhq.com. We'll get me on the email, or at Sean Callanan on Twitter, on Instagram, on Snapchat, and most definitely in the Sports Biz Slack community. Yeah, the opener there, rethink that bad password. I need a rant siren. I see so many bad passwords in the world of sports, and it is a really big risk, a massive risk, having poorly constructed passwords, repeated passwords, duplicate passwords across multiple accounts, passwords that are shared amongst lots of people. It's a big security risk. How do I get around it? And this is not a sponsor spot or an ad. It's just a tool that I love to use. I use the tool 1Password. That's 1, the number, and the word password. It puts the appropriate security around all my passwords. I never have to think of a password anymore. I just click the button and say, generate me a new password, and save it for me. And it has the ability to share those passwords amongst your team. So if you have certain accounts, like a Snapchat account that gets shared, or an Instagram account, or those kind of things, where you want to be able to quickly access it, it works on your phone, whether it be Android or iOS. Really, there is no excuse for having bad passwords and saying, yes, this is our password, team name, the year that was founded, and the number A, or the letter A, and that has actually been a password for a professional sports team. So, yeah, don't have bad passwords. Life is too short. So that's the end rant. This week, I caught up with Tom Halls. Tom previously was on the podcast when he was with the Lawn Tennis Association, British Tennis, and he was actually on his way out, heading to Formula E, and went to catch up with him, and now he is at Energy Sports. He's fully in the esports business, and I was really interested to catch up with Tom, especially after listening in to the esports panel at Lou Sticker's Money in Sport Conference in Gold Coast last year, with Dave Harris from Guinevere Capital talking about his team, the Direwolves, and it was a really insightful esports panel. Sort of opened up my eyes a lot. I was really keen to learn more about esports, but just some of the things that they were talking about and the way that esports landscape looked like, it looked very similar to when I started Sports Geek. I started Sports Geek when sports teams were seeing these digital fan bases grow, but not quite sure how to connect and how to produce content for them, how to engage them. I see esports being in a very similar space, only with far bigger audiences right now. So there's some really big opportunity in there, and Tom is my go-to guy in esports. You know, so I thought I would catch up with him, see how he's going in the new job, and go from there. So here is my conversation with Tom Halls, now at NRG Esports team. Very happy to welcome back Tom Halls to the Sports Geek Podcast. Tom, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
We were just having a bit of banter before, you know, in the pre-record. Last time I spoke to you, you were at British Lawn Tennis, the LTA, and it was episode 101, and you were just leaving Lawn Tennis, and I reached out to talk to you about the role you previewed going to Formula E, and you've left Formula E. I don't know if it's a kiss of death or a level-up ability. And now I'm calling you again. You've changed jobs again. Take us through the last 18 months of the Tom Halls experience.
No, I certainly think it's been a positive. You know, whenever we've caught up, it's always been a good thing, not only for me and yourself to catch up, but for my career in that sense as well. It's been a pretty crazy 18 months. Like you said, I moved to Formula E September, October 15 and was there for a full season. So did a full season with them, traveling around the world.
So take people through what Formula E is, you know, where it fits in the motorsport space.
So that's a great point. So it's the world's first and the only FIA licensed fully electric racing series. So if you look at Formula One, they're hybrid cars. They have a mixture of an electric and petrol engine. But Formula E is fully electric. So with that come all the challenges of managing battery energy like you would a tiny remote control car if you were racing. So they race globally. They race in cities, not at specific tracks. An example is they raced in Battersea Park in London. They raced in the Bay of Hong Kong, you know, just a couple of months ago. And their season finishes in New York this year as well. So it's incredible. You know, they've had great opportunities to go around cities and really bring clean, ergo-friendly motor racing to the world. And it's, you know, they've had a younger demographic. They attract the millennials. That's the target demographic they go after. So yeah, it's it was a really exciting opportunity for me. And I think
so your role there was head of digital.
Yes. So as part of that, I looked after everything from website to app development to API management of all of the data coming off our cars. We passed that API to selected third parties and also Fan Boost, which was and still is a world first in terms of fan engagement. Fans are able to vote for their favorite drivers through the website, app or through Twitter. And the top three drivers get a physical power boost in their second car during the race. So think of it like Mario Kart on steroids, for instance.
So it's effectively, if we're taking the, you know, the NBA All-Star vote is currently happening now, you're taking that type of live voting, but giving them NBA Jam-like power-ups in the race.
Yeah, and doing it pretty much almost in real time. And actually, ourselves and the NBA used the same technology vendor for the Fan Boost mechanic. We used the same agency, so there was a lot of best practice there.
So, take people a little bit behind the curtain. What was the tech and the agency and happening behind the scenes there, if you can?
So the company, yeah, no, absolutely. The company were called Telescope. They still are. And Telescope, they power a lot of mass voting mechanisms like The Voice, America's Got Talent, American Idol, X Factor. They power a ton of those mass market TV voting mechanisms, but they just started formally with their first attempt at branching into sport fan engagement. And they've now since extended that to the NBA. They did the, I don't know if you recall, the Google vote. You could actually search within Google and vote within Google. They powered that for the NBA as well.
So it is a matter for them to be tapping into the API, getting the firehose access, whether it be from Twitter, the Facebook comments, Google search, and then being able to, as you said, in real time, pull in that data. And in your case, feed it back into the races.
Yeah, and we actually had a real-time live updating leaderboard as well, which caused challenges at times, but for fans to be able to see that their votes were literally making the difference, you know, it was an incredible thing. And the championship was won by 1 point in the first season by the person who won Fan Boost the most. And the second season, second and third place were our biggest Fan Boost winners in that sense. So it did have, it had a really positive impact. The goal was always not to detract from the overall sporting objective, and we couldn't have it impact too much, but was used as a mechanism to bring fans into the series, especially those that are used to, you know, sitting there playing on their phones whilst they're watching sport at home.
Did you have any of those outliers? And we've seen it recently in the NBA. We saw it in the NHL All-Star Game I think it was John Scott getting voted in. We saw that Zaza Pachulia nearly got voted in to the All-Star game last year, and the NBA has actually changed their ruling, so the whole country of Georgia isn't getting in people that don't deserve it. Did you have something like, you know, Justin Bieber decide to get behind a driver and have a huge spike in ratings? Any outliers like that?
We did. So Jose Maria Lopez, an Argentinian driver who races for DS Virgin, was really savvy and got on board a couple of his YouTube friends who had, I think, 20, 30 million subscriptions between them, and had them actively pushing him, you know, and outside of Argentina, he was not he was well known for his racing endeavors. He wasn't the most well-known driver in the series. But because of him leveraging that, and the drivers actually proactively getting influencer friends to vote and promote them, a lot of the drivers went up the rankings that you wouldn't have expected.
That's terrific. I mean, there's always that classic one of how do you get your athletes involved? How do you get them involved in, you know, the fan engagement activities and reaching out to the fans? In the end, plain old ego. It just works. They want to see themselves at the top of the leaderboard.
Absolutely, and it was not without its controversies. You know, we had a number of heated discussions with some of the drivers because you know, they had challenges with the system, and some of them were doing incredible amounts of fan engagement across Twitter, but Twitter was only a small percentage of the overall vote. You know, yep. We forget sometimes that Twitter isn't available in every country in the world, and when you've got a series like Formula E, which has such a strong Chinese presence now, whether it's from investors to teams, you know, that there's a huge audience there that don't have Twitter and that vote with email and still vote through basic websites.
Yep. So that's so you did this stuff at Formula E, and you went through a season. Any major initiatives that you rolled out in Formula E that you look back on with a lot of pride?
Well, I think the biggest one is for me was bringing esports into it and bringing video gaming into the world of Formula E. You know, I think when you looked at the Formula E demographic, if you looked at the content they were consuming, motorsports was first and foremost their primary pleasure.
Yep.
Video gaming and technology was second and third. So for us, it was quite a natural seg. We had our we had the license in Microsoft's Forza Xbox game.
Yep.
We dipped our toe. We ran what you'd call a LAN event in the industry. We included our drivers racing against some of our fans on Xbox gaming rigs, and we ran it in a theater in West London, and it was incredibly popular. You know, the traction we were seeing online, it was getting as many views digitally as some of our races were.
Okay.
So it was an opportunity, and that then spun off into a six-month series working with Microsoft and Visa, who came on board as a title partner. And I stand by when we say it was the easiest sponsorship sell we ever had was selling Visa on that, because they recognized that, you know, our demographic and the esports demographic was 18 to 24. So that's the Pro Series, the Visa Pro Series that I rolled out there was probably the game changer for me, which has led to further career advancements. But it's also the output of that, or the evolution, was the $1 million e-race that you saw in Vegas at CES a week ago.
Yep. And the thing is, and a lot of people, when I've been talking to people about esports, is that it's not an either or. It's not I'm esports or I'm traditional sports. Your data said that, you know, your fans followed racing, but also, you know, were gamers, and happened to be racing gamers, so it was a good fit. And, you know, other people I've been talking to, whether it be League of Legends or other sports, these fans who love their games, they love their sports as well, and that's why we're sort of seeing esports and the sports business bleed, with professional teams buying esports franchises and dipping their toe in that water. And your data just showed that was the case, that there was a correlation with your fans.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are picking that up. I mean, you saw Miami Heat yesterday have invested in Misfits, who are a relatively small esports team but huge potential. I mean, Charlie Shin at the MLS, you know, we had a fascinating discussion at E3, the video games convention, earlier this year, And the MLS are at the level where their partnership with EA and FIFA allows them to say, well, we know that these people play as Seattle Sounders in game,
yep,
but aren't Seattle Sounders fans in real life. So there's huge opportunities to convert fans from video games into real life fandom, as it were. But equally, vice versa, there's a lot traditional sports can learn from esports' current model.
So we've naturally moved the discussion across to esports, which brings you to your current role. You are now at NRG Esports. You are the Chief Digital Officer. Tell us a little bit about NRG Esports, where they're founded, and what they're about.
Sure. So we are just over a year old. We were co-founded by a guy called Gerard Butler, who had been in esports for 5, 10, 15 years, was an ex-professional player. And he brought in Andy Miller, who, and Andy is in a roundabout way my boss. Andy is ex-Apple. He was VP of advertising with Apple. He reported directly into Steve Jobs. So there are some phenomenal stories you get out of him. So those were the co-founders. And then when would it have been? May, June last year, there was a big announcement, and we had Shaquille O'Neal, we had Jimmy Rollins, and we had Alex Rodriguez, A-Rod,
yep,
buy in. And they're all investors, they're advisors. You know, with Shaq, we literally have the biggest kid in the world as an investor in the organization. And our goal as an esports organization is to be a little bit different from some of the others. You know, we are competitively, we're growing. But from a content, branding, brand ethos perspective, we are the fun, fan-friendly esports organization. You know, we have a slightly different approach. We're not all about winning.
Yep.
We're about enabling fans to game and have fun. And we've got a variety of teams and personalities that kind of tick all those boxes.
So take, for the people who are listening that might be going, yeah, I understand, hang on, I'm listening to a sports marketing, sports business podcast, I don't understand esports. Take us through how, I guess, the business sort of sits. You sort of talked about, hey, we've got different teams, how they're structured around different games and things like that. What does the, yeah, explain the esports ecosystem to people who don't quite get it yet.
So esports in its purest sense is playing video games competitively.
Yep.
And within that realm, you will have any number of tournament organizers. So much the same as you would have the AFL or the NHL or MLB, you will have people like ESL or MLG or Face It in the UK. You'll have these organizations that run competitive leagues and tournaments for any number of competitive games. The biggest games and the games that people have heard of but maybe don't find easy to understand are League of Legends, Dota, you know, StarCraft, those, yep, kind of games. The more commonly played ones that you and me would play outside of professional bits and pieces might be FIFA, Madden, NHL.
Yep.
And a lot of, so you then have organizations that sit there. Think of them like an NHL or an NBA team. They'd have a development team, under 21s, under 23 team, and a professional team.
Yep.
We have a Overwatch game team. We have a CSGO team. We have a Hearthstone team. We have, you know, a Smite team. So we have a number of teams that sit under our organization, and each of these teams compete in these events that are put on. So the industry itself is still quite nascent. There's not the regulation that you have within soccer or within football or hockey to an extent. So that's a growing pain for us as an industry. Regulation is key. And I think regulation at the moment is why you're not seeing people buy into it or not jumping in with both feet. If you look at the 76ers investment, you look at Peter Guber and the Warriors or Peter's investment, it's more, you know, we're buying a stake of that organization and we'll lend our business expertise to you in the industry. So it's very nascent. It's growing. It's really fun to watch. You know, the consumption methods are very different to traditional sport. 99% of broadcast of available content is on Twitch, is on YouTube, Red, their gaming mechanic. it's making its way into traditional broadcast. ESPN is showing Friday night primetime esports tournaments now.
Yeah, and you've got MLB or BAM as it is now taking over some of the League of Legends streaming work. I saw that announced recently.
Which is a phenomenal deal for both parties, I think, and is a real testament to the seriousness of. I mean, if you look at Riot have huge offices, League of Legends developers, not just in LA. They have a huge Oceanic player base as well, like an incredibly diverse one, and European and Korean databases. They are one of the most valuable organizations in the world. You know, even outside of sports, their numbers are silly.
And that's where it is a little bit different because. You know, if you're taking League of Legends, if you're trying to do an analogy into sport, League of Legends is effectively like basketball or football. It's like a sport, but instead of having an organizing body, you've actually just got a game developer that is controlling that game and promoting that game. But then you've got these competitions, and so that's where it's really unique that you know people can be like you said. League of Legends, or they could be playing the sports-based games, but it's really driven by the different things. I was reading an article recently on how disruptive when a patch. So a patch is when an update to a game comes out and changes it, and it's effectively like you hear the complaints when a slight rule change gets implemented in cricket or a sport, and it throws everybody off. A patch gets rolled out in a game. And your team might be training a certain way to defeat and work as a team to understand how to win. They change the program because that's what it is, and all of their hard work can go out the door. So it's a really hard thing to plan for and train for when you've got your game developers, putting in something that makes the gun feel heavier or doesn't make something work as they had been training for 6 months.
Yeah, that's a great analogy, and I think if you look at the frequency as well, it happens almost every quarter in every major game. So you have professionals that are having to relearn or play as new characters and tweak that. So it really is. I mean, to put it in context, I'm over the hill in terms of being able to play these games at the age of 31 because I don't have the reaction speed and that. So these guys have careers, and when these patches come out, they make significant impact. You know, the meta, as we refer to it, the way a game is played, changes and ebbs and flows so dramatically over the course of a year. It's a beautiful thing to see, and it makes for great storylines as content tellers, as storytellers, rather.
So we're really talking about, it's the same as if we were talking about, again, basketball or football. We're talking about the technique, you know, how well Ronaldo can kick. So that's the performance athlete side. Tell us a little bit more about the fan side in comparison to, you know, your experience in sport, you know, working in tennis and brands in the sports space and knowing the Formula E fans. What are gaming fans like as far as, you know, how engaged they are in digital? What platforms are they on? Tell us a little bit more about that.
Sure. So, you know, these guys were born into a digital world. You know, if you look at the majority of viewers, they are 18 to 24-year-old males, and they are males that are with high disposable income, more inclined to buy digital content. They watch, you know, 3 or 4 hours a day of video gaming or YouTube channels. I think if you look Twitch's latest stats, I think they were probably from about 9-12 months ago. Well, you know, we've got people watching on average, I think it was 4 to 5 hours a day worth of content. So these are people that adore, you know, they're very, very passionate. There is, you know, having attended a couple of events in the last few months, they are as passionate, if not more passionate than some of these sports fans that, you know, as a soccer fan, you know, I would be screaming and shouting in the stands. And you get that atmosphere at these events as well. You know, these are... They're passionate fans, and the industry, those players, that Ronaldo, who for us is Seagull, who's an Overwatch player of ours, they are revered. You know, they have fan art, they have people. We were chased through a mall in Korea a couple of months ago by a load of Korean schoolgirls that had recognized Brandon or seagull and chased him. So it gives you an understanding of how passionate these guys are.
So they are super passionate. I mean, normally I've used the David Putty face paint analogy before. They're very much all over digital. But are they, you know, one of the key metrics for the super passionate fans is the tattoo. Have you seen a few NRG or esports based tattoos such as the fandom?
I've not seen an NRG one yet, unfortunately.
That's got to be a KPI for 2017, surely.
I hope so. I mean, we're about to go through a bit of an identity refresh, so hopefully no one gets our current logo because that will change. But I have seen certain organisations, you know, there are people like Team Dignitas who were actually founded out of the UK, have been around for 10, 15 years. There are people that have some of these team logos as tattoos if you go searching out there. I mean, video game tattoos are becoming increasingly common now. And the teams associated with that as well. You look at the tier one, the teams that have been around a long time have huge, huge fan bases on par with a lot of professional sport teams.
So the thing is, you know, it is the reverse of the sports model. Like, so the traditional sports model is all the money's coming from TV, a lot of money's coming from attendance, and online and digital is the rising star and it's starting to build. Whereas if you take that pyramid, it's almost flipped upside down in the esports space because it's all digital, but you're now scratching the surface of more events where fans are attending in real life, watching, you know, in large stadiums, and sort of flipping that model. And as you said, TV is starting to come on board. How much growth do you think is there in people turning up like they did at the Staples Center? And a full Staples Center to watch people play League of Legends, how much more growth do you think there is in that space?
Well, I think you'll see more esports events in traditional arenas this year. You know, the Warriors hosted IEM Oakland, which is an ESL event, and they sold that out. Staples sold out in about 4.5 minutes, I think, for League of Legends. We've seen it all over the place. Katowice in Poland is probably the mecca in terms of that's where ESL-1 is held. Yep. It's a tiny village it's a town in Poland that is known pretty much purely just for its esports arena. I call it an esports arena. It's a football arena, but it sold out 60,000 people in about a minute and a half for last year's League of Legends. And tickets will vary from like $20 to tier one VIP, where you can meet players. You're paying $3,500 a ticket for this. It is as premium as sporting events. So when you're paying for that, you know, that VIP experience, it's there. I think, you know, we only have one dedicated esports arena in the UK. There are a couple in the States. The more popular model is to use, you know, the Smite Championships we had last weekend were at the Cobb Energy Center in Atlanta. So those existing venues are a good opportunity.
So it's very much, like as the way you've described, it's very much a global sport. And, you know, here I am talking to you over in London. NRG Esports are based west coast of the US. How does that come about? How do you go from Formula E, head of digital there? Obviously, you're doing the e-race stuff, so you're starting to dabble in the e-sports space. How do you end up in that role?
It's a good question. I think I've touched on this in other discussions with people, but I was contacted by a very good friend of mine, Dan Brusilowski, who heads up innovation for the Golden State Warriors. And Dan had worked with Andy in the past when they were both at a VC fund. And Dan knew what I was doing with Formula E and said, look, I think you should speak to Andy. He's looking for someone to head up content and bits and pieces with his new team. And I was aware of NRG purely from the Shaq factor. Yeah. You know, that does a lot for us. And I got in touch with Andy and we got talking, and the more we talked about it, the more excited I got.
Yep.
So my intention wasn't really to leave FE, Formula E, at the time, but, you know, opportunities like this to get in on a nascent space, I mean, it's as innovative, if not with greater potential, than Formula E. So Dan was the conduit to to me moving over. And it, actually, we reciprocated by he obviously went along to IEM Oakland at his own arena, which I think was a bit of an eye opener for him, seeing League of Legends and Counter Strike and all these teams playing there. So he has a much better understanding of it now, and I've got a new job to thank him for.
Yes, and if you're not following, you should be following Daniel Brew, Daniel B R U, and I'll give him a shout out. I will get him on the podcast soon. He's doing great things at the Warriors, and yeah, a very well connected man in that Silicon Valley tech space. And no wonder he was able to connect you with them. So I guess the last thing I want to sort of do in wrapping this up, if so, like myself, I really love what you're doing at NRG, because you're bringing that sports and the sports marketing experience to esports. And so recently at Lou Sticker's Money in Sport conference, they had a panel. They had Daniel Ringland for Riot Games here in Australia, and Dave Harris, who now owns the LG Direwolves, talking about esports. So again, a relatively sports business dominant crowd that really didn't quite understand it, and all the slides and everything they were putting up of where esports is was very similar from my point of view of where sports was when I started Sports Geek, 8 years ago. And having a really passionate fan base that were aggregating and gathering in these digital places where they hadn't started rolling out content and ways to engage those fans and digital memberships and all of those kind of things, where I can see esports starting to scratch the surface of those things. So for mine, it's a really, as a sports marketer, which you are as well, to be able to roll out those sports marketing and ticketing techniques and all of those things that we traditionally have been doing for many years in the sports space, to roll them out in the esports space, is exceptionally powerful. And I think, getting that mix of, getting sports marketers and people who've worked in the sports business as advisors, guys like Shaq and A-Rod and obviously the guys behind the Kings, is a really smart way of going about it.
Yeah, and I think from our perspective, that's really where we see ourselves as different. I think when you look at people like the 76ers, the Heat that have bought into these teams, we've been founded with that from the ground up. So we've got a board meeting next week. When we have these board meetings and we speak to our investors, it's a lot easier for us to go and get seven figures signed off to go and do content production and think like a sports team, because these guys come from that industry. Yep. Shaq will understand that, video content draws views, it draws exposure, it converts fans. I mean, to the point where we announced this next week. We've spoken about it internally, but we actually announce NRG Studios next week, and we're about to break ground, for want of a better phrase, on a production facility in Burbank, in California, in Hollywood. And we're going to be producing TV quality broadcast content out of there, based around our teams, based around the games industry, the esports industry. So we see that as a great opportunity. And I don't think any other team in the space at the moment would really be able to buy into that or to come at it with that approach. And so content is king for us in that sense. So that's the route we're heading down.
And the thing is, with the sport, still trying to find out who the major players are, and you'll have, as we've seen in the traditional sports space, the more content that gets pushed out, the appetite has not abated. If you're the first out there producing the best content, it's a land grab for fans. They can go, I love NRG because they're doing this stuff. And that's why, you can be the entree to why they become a fan of your team. And that's the really big opportunity for you guys. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to keeping an eye on how you go about it. And I'm sure we'll catch up during the year to discuss it further. Where should people who want to learn more, where should they be reading? I don't want to discount it by saying what's the Mashable of esports, but where should people go to learn more about esports?
The kind of number one place I tend to go to is .esports, D-O-T esports. I think it's .esports.com. They have everything from what's happening with professional tournaments down to roster changes, down to the intricacies of the game. It's a great place to go and browse it. I think it's fair to call it the Mashable of esports.
Yep, not in a derogatory way. It's not that it's just coming out 3 days later after you found out about it on another platform.
Yahoo have also tested very, very heavily as well. So Yahoo Esports is perhaps more easier to grasp in that sense. But .esports really get into the nitty gritty.
And of course, not neglecting the very active esports channel in the SportsBiz Slack community.
Absolutely, and I think we've got some phenomenal members in there at the moment. You know, we've got people from Riot. We've got fellow team owners and staff from other teams in there as well. So people should definitely get on there. And I'm in there. Feel free to ping and have a discussion.
And the thing that's what I think where it's, you know, it has definitely piqued my interest and got more of my interest via that. Like I was really surprised when I set up the SportsBiz Slack, which you can join up at sportsgeekhq.com/slack. And I think it was Andrew Ray was one of the first guys who said, oh, can we set up an esports channel? I said, well, it's a community. I'm not, you know, I don't decide what goes in. Of course we can. And, yeah, the interest and people sort of checking in and, you know, we've been following stuff like, you know, like you said, Miami Heat buying a team, the 76ers, the Riot Games deal with BAM, all of that stuff. I'm getting all of that via the esports channel. So it's a really good way, again, if you want to get up to date. And there are people, smart people like Tom, in there where you can ask him yourself how things are going.
Yeah, I've got to give a shout out to Andrew Ray as well, because I think he's been incredibly helpful. He's ex-Riot. So if you want insight on League of Legends and what happens there and how their mechanic works, then he's a great person to ask.
And I saw that Daniel Ringland from Riot here in Australia also joined up the other day. So more and more esports will be happening in there. So, Tom, thank you very much for coming on the podcast again, and I look forward to catching up with you soon.
Thanks for having me. Great to catch up again.
Sign up for Sports Geek News at sportsgeekhq.com/signup now.
Thanks again to Tom Halls, a.k.a. TG Halls, and I hope he keeps that Twitter handle now. I released the Sports Biz 50 post, and thank you to Isaac who sent me a DM, said Tom's Twitter handle's wrong. I said, what do you mean Tom's Twitter handle's wrong? It's always been TG Halls. And he'd gone through a bit of an identity crisis, changed it to Tom. Please stick with TG Halls. I like you as TG Halls. And which brings me on to the Sports Biz 50. I'm super happy with the response, but I also know when you put yourself out there and you put out a list, the problem with lists is everybody who's not on the list is not on the list. And, you know, and I took on the feedback of people from certain areas weren't covered. And, you know, I just literally listed 50 people that I've been talking to, engaging with. And recency bias is a thing. It was very much dominated by people I've been talking to, either in real life, meeting in conferences, talking to in the sports biz Slack. And so the feedback, which was great for the people and all well deserved, all that, go check out and connect with all the 50 people that I listed. I'm not going to take back any of those selections. They're all terrific people. But what I want to do is I want to push myself to be more connected with the sports biz community and sort of abolish that recency bias, or at least push myself to widen my recency bias. So SportsBiz Slack has been a really big reason behind that. It's, you know, it's approaching 700 people, and I'm, you know, really impressed and very thankful for the people that are contributing in channels like the digital channel, the esports channel, the sponsorship channel, people talking about ticketing. So stay tuned. I want to do more with the SportsBiz 50. I do want to highlight more people that are doing great work. And, you know, one of the tenets of what I was writing was a lot of these people, they're not massive tweeters. They don't tweet a lot like myself or people like Baz or Blair Hughes that tweet a lot and are very visible in a platform like Twitter. A lot of them are hard at work. Not to say those two guys aren't, but they're hard at work and don't have time to be sharing and tweeting. But they're definitely people to follow, to connect with if you get to meet in real life, I highly, highly recommend it. So I'm going to continue. So stay tuned for the Sports Biz 50 to take on another life, because I really want to push past the recency bias, and I do want to make sure that more of you are connected with more of the people that I know and that I know are doing a terrific job. And it's great to get tweets back. Like I did from Jeff Mason, saying he's now connected with Eric Blankenship at the Tampa Bay Lightning. That's the kind of connections I want to make. So thank you very much for the people who shared and liked and responded about the Sports Biz 50. If you haven't checked it out, go to sportsgeekhq.com to check it out. You can go to the Sports Geek HQ on Instagram, where we've been sharing the Sports Biz 50 people on Instagram every day, get behind it, and please let me know if there's someone, some unsung hero, someone that you know that's doing a terrific job. They don't have to be super active on Twitter. They don't have to be super active on LinkedIn. Just tell me what they're doing. I'd love to meet them. I'd love to chat with them. I want to show off some of these unsung heroes. So until next episode. And again, you'll have seen there's a bit of consistency. I'm hoping to get some consistency in 2017. Episodes coming out every week, every Monday. Big thanks to that goes to my editor, James, who does a terrific job. Meg, who is making sure the production schedule is going on. And also new staff member, Jolly, who is helping turn the content machine at Sports Geek up. So a big thanks to the team behind me to help me keep me on the schedule. The sounds of the game for this episode, stay tuned after. The sounds of the game is a little bit different. They're from the Formula E race that we talked about with Tom Halls in Vegas. So I grabbed a few snippets from their Facebook page. So that's the sounds of the game. But until next week, my name is Sean Callanan, and you have been listening to the Sports Geek Podcast.
Like the Sports Geek Podcast? Find us on Facebook.com/SportsGeek. Check out which teams work with Sports Geek at SportsGeekHQ.com/clients. Please leave a review on iTunes. Go to SportsGeekHQ.com/iTunes. Thanks for listening to the Sports Geek Podcast.
Graham Carroll, Alexiou and David Greco, and they're all off into the wall. What a massive accident that is. Three of the sim racers wiped out, coming down into the first corner, three wide into such a tight gap. Was never going to go.
Then did Graham Carroll make a mistake through turn 20? What happened? There were three wide going into that first corner, and it just was not an option. There's three wheels on our wagon here.
So that is, well, not good news for those three drivers as they smash into the barrier.